So let's turn then to Luke and chapter 15. And as we said earlier, we'll spend the day with this parable. And it's a parable that naturally falls into two. You have the emphasis on the younger son to begin with, up as far as verse 25 of chapter 15. And then from verse 25 to verse 32, the focus of attention then is on the older son. So many times we've looked at this together. And what I want to do first of all is show you how this parable is rooted in an Old Testament narrative. I'm sure we know by now, don't we, that so often in the Gospels, what Jesus says or what he does is rooted in the Old Testament. And very often it's quite explicit when Jesus says things like, just as Moses was lifted up in the wilderness, even so shall the Son of Man be lifted up. Do you remember on another occasion he said that he would offer this generation the sign of Jonah? So Jesus will very clearly sometimes make reference to Old Testament events. But even when that doesn't happen, nearly everything is shaped by and can be compared with and contrasted to the Old Testament. So we'll do that then, first of all. And then the second thing we'll do is we'll just explore why it is that the younger son goes on a journey to the far country and what it meant to him. And then we'll finish with the response of the father. So let's start then in the very first verse, verse 11. And it's that verse that tells us what the Old Testament narrative background is. These words to his audience would have meant one story. Look at the words, verse 11. A certain man had two sons. And immediately, for his audience, that would have been a reference to Isaac and the two sons, Esau and Jacob. Now, we've just spent 6 weeks or so in our Bible studies looking at the story of Jacob. And it's had a few surprises. One of the major surprises for us, I suppose, was that occasion when Jacob goes into his father Isaac with the skins of the animals on his arms, seeking the inheritance. And we saw that people always tend to think that that's Jacob trying to deceive Isaac so that Isaac thinks that it's Esau in front of him, so that Isaac then gives Esau, as he thinks, the blessing. Well, what we've seen in Bible study is that Jacob is the one dressed in those goat skins who is being deceived. His father full well knows that it's Jacob in front of him and goes along with the idea that it's Esau, and it's Jacob who is deceived. Now, it's with Jacob in mind then that my thoughts have been led to this parable. The background, I'm sure you'll see in a moment or two, is very similar. So let's start by comparing this parable with the story of Jacob. So in this parable then, there's a father with two sons. In the story of Jacob, obviously, there's Isaac and there's Esau and there's Jacob. Both stories are about an inheritance. Jacob and Esau compete for inheritance, the blessing of Isaac. And as you look here in verse 12, here's another story about a father's inheritance. So the idea of the father's inheritance is central to both accounts. You have the emphasis in both stories on the younger son. The younger son here is how the story begins, And of course, the story with Isaac begins with the younger son. And then I'm sure you can see, as you think about this for yourselves, that in both stories, there is a journey away from home. So Jacob, off he goes, sent away by his mother and father to find himself a wife, and he journeys to his uncle Laban. Here in this parable, there's a journey. The younger son journeys to this far country. So both have the idea of a journey. And then finally, can you see how both stories, the Jacob story and this parable, both have an account of the return home? Jacob, after 20 plus years with his uncle, returns to his home, and here the prodigal son returns to his father's house. So, father and son's inheritance, journeys, and returning home. That's the links between the stories. But what do you think are the differences? And it seems to me that when you read the Gospels and you look for the Old Testament background, we've done it many times, haven't we? You make the comparisons, and so you can see how one story in the Gospel compares with a story in the Old Testament, and you draw out those comparisons, and then your next task is to notice what the contrasts are. And it's very often in the contrasts that the lesson is to be found. So if your brains are working now and you've got the idea, what do you think is the contrast between the story of the prodigal and the story of Jacob? Well, I want to show you two. And it may be that you'll see more if you spend some time thinking later on today. Here's the first contrast. In the Jacob story, Jacob leaves home with nothing, and he returns home with everything. He goes off to his uncle Laban, and he arrives with nothing. And he sees Rachel at the well, and he agrees to work for 7 years in order to marry Rachel, then a further 7 when he's been deceived, and then a further number of years in Laban's service. And we read then of how much he has. He's rich in flocks. He has 4 wives. He has sons and at least 1 daughter. And he comes home laden with riches. Well, how does it work in the parable? In the parable, the son leaves rich and returns poor. He has the father's inheritance, and he leaves with his pockets full, with his hopes high, and then he spends all that he has in a very short, it seems, period of time in this life that's called prodigal. So it means he's very generous. He entertains his friends, he buys them a good time, he enjoys himself immensely, he spends all that he has. And then he returns home destitute. And notice how Jesus tells the parable. This man is starving, this man is filthy, this man has lost everything. And so his return home is the return of a desperate individual. So, can you see the contrast? Jacob is poor and returns rich. The prodigal is rich and returns poor. Then there's one more contrast. And I want you to think of this now. See if you can arrive at the contrast for yourselves. There's a common theme of a journey home. And if you think of the Jacob stories, we didn't get this far in our Bible study, but there's a great deal of attention paid to Jacob's return journey. And he sets off in a rush to flee from Laban. And he's got all his wives and his children and his flocks with him. And he journeys home, and as he journeys home, the tension rises and the drama increases, and Jacob's fear begins to mount, because he is journeying home to meet his brother, the brother whom he has struggled with from before he was born. And the way the story is told in Genesis, as Jacob returns and that prospect of meeting Esau increases, Jacob hides for as long as he can from confronting his brother, sends across his goods and his family first, and he's finally left alone, and God meets with him, and then he meets with his brother Esau. So the return home is to meet the older brother. Now, if you compare that to the story of the prodigal, his return home is to meet his father. He has been thinking about his father, as you can see, from verse 18 onwards. And his journey is an anticipated meeting with his father. Now, can you see the difference? Jacob's return home is an anticipated meeting with his brother. But here in this parable, it's an anticipated meeting with his father. And just like Esau in a way, Jacob in a way, the prodigal prepares for that meeting. He's got his speech ready. He's got his excuses, if you like, or whatever you want to call them. He's got everything ready to meet his father. And then the great encounter takes place. And that's where the stories join again. Jacob and Esau meet. The son and the father meet. And so both stories end. So if you take the contrast of the parable is this. The son returns poor, and the son meets the father. That's the contrast. With Jacob, Jacob returns rich, and he meets his brother. So this parable is about a poor son returning home to meet his father. And it's there that the heart of the parable is found. What does a story of a poor son returning home to meet his father tell us? And here's the key. Tell us about what? What do these three parables in Luke 15, what purpose do they serve? If you look at the opening of the chapter then, let's read these first two verses. Luke 15. Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to him to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." And then verse 3, so he spoke this parable to them. These three parables teach the nature and the character of God. Jesus, who has come from God, Jesus, who is to reveal God, has been criticized for eating with sinners. And so the Pharisees accuse him of religious sin by eating and drinking with sinners. And so Jesus, the one sent from God, the one who is God, teaches these parables to show the nature of God. So let's say it again. What does a story about a poor son returning home to his father tell us about the nature and the character of God? Now that's our purpose this morning, to work out what we learn about God from a poor son returning to meet his father. Well, to build that picture then, let's ask a question. Why does this son go on his journey? Now, what I mean by that is, let's try and work it out. what's going on in this son's life. So we know the facts. He asks his father for his portion of the inheritance. What do you think is going on in the mind of the son? I want to put three ideas to you about how the son is, if you like, is functioning at the time we are introduced to him in verse 12. So there it is. Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. Verse 13, not long after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and they wasted his possessions with prodigal living. I want to suggest three things. The first is this, and as we think about this together, what I want us to do is first of all think about anyone that we can identify, whom we love, whom we pray for, who could fall into the category of a prodigal son. I want us then to think of ourselves and the sort of thoughts and temptations that we often face. So first of all, this younger son is an example of preferring the present to the future. What matters to him in terms of priority is now becomes more important than then. Now and what he can have now and know now and experience now takes priority over what the future has for him. Inheritance is all about the future. It's about the death of the father, and when the father dies, how these two sons will then come into the experience of the father's inheritance. But this son prefers now, and all his thoughts and his energies go into his life in the here and now. And that's often the temptation, isn't it, that we face. Some fall as a result of it, that here and now becomes more important than thoughts of future glory, than thoughts of a future inheritance, than thoughts of eternity. It's all about the now. And that's what happens with this younger son. Let's put the second idea out there. This younger son prefers pleasure to purpose. Now, we're going to see the older son this evening. And the older son is an example of works and purpose. And whatever we'll say this evening, what we need to do right now is recognize that for the younger son, his whole life becomes about pleasure. It's what he wants to enjoy, he wants to experience, he doesn't want to miss out on anything. He wants to have whatever is there to be experienced. He wants to know it for himself. And so it's this idea of prioritizing pleasure over any father's purpose that may be in store for him. So he's having some priorities, if you like. He's prioritizing the present over the future. He prioritizes pleasure over purpose. And then the final priority, if you like, for this young man is friends matter more than family. Now, this is very important in the parable, the idea of family. And not just in this parable, but throughout the parables of Jesus, there's an emphasis on family life. And for Jesus, family life meant the life of Israel. It didn't mean the life of a particular mum and dad and their two kids. Family life was the life of the covenant. It was the life of the land. It was the life of the people of God. It was life under the blessing of God. It was this whole idea of the family of the people of God. And so in this parable, the young son is presented as someone who prioritizes relationships with those outside of the family over relationships within the family. So if you like, the father, symbolizing God, he's the representation to us of God. This younger son decides that the relationships that matter to him right now are not the relationships that flow from his father, the family of God. What matters to him are relationships that are outside. So he prioritizes. He is more committed to, he is more interested in the relationships outside of the covenant than those within. And I wonder, as you listen to this, do you recognize, perhaps for yourself, or do you recognize in the lives of others, how so often these elements are found in anyone who journeys to a far country? So you prioritize the present over the future, pleasure over purpose, and relationships outside the family of God, more than relationships within. And so as a consequence, off our young son goes. And the drama of the parable, I'm sure you get a sense of it, you're familiar with it anyway. The drama is to do with how quickly his life turns from riches and pleasure and friendship to a relationship of poverty and hunger and want and need and desperation. So look at how quickly it occurs. Verse 14. Now, when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. So in one verse, everything changes for this young man. Verse 15, then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. Now, I'm sure we all know, don't we, just how humiliating, how degrading, but how religiously sinful that was for him as a member of the people of Israel. And then his situation deteriorates, verses 16 and 17. He would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. Now that line there, no one gave him anything, it's a covenantal statement. So that simply means that if this young son was still within the family of God, then the covenant would have provided for him. There would have been obligations and duties on the people of Israel to provide for this young son. But he's outside the covenant, and he's with the people who don't belong to the covenant. So there's no duties, there's no responsibilities for him. He's left, he's abandoned, he is starving. And then, of course, he begins to think. Now, let's spend a moment with the thoughts of this young man, from verse 17 down to his actions. And as you familiarize yourself again with these thoughts of the young son, I want you to ask the question, what's the central idea of these thoughts? What's at the core of what this young man is thinking about? And I'm sure you know it, and if you get it right, then the rest of the parable will follow. This young man begins to think about the nature of his relationship with the Father. That's at the heart of what he's thinking about. And he's thinking about this relationship, and as he sees it, he can no longer consider himself a son. He has lost the right to be regarded as a son of this father. So take a look at verse 18. I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, I have sinned against heaven and before you. Verse 19, I am no longer worthy to be called your son. So as he sees it, he has lost sonship. Now, I can't put it any other way, so I hope you understand what I mean. He doesn't see himself as without any hope at all, but he thinks he has lost sonship. So, as a result of his actions, he now considers himself to be nothing more than a servant. And so it's with that idea that he returns to his father, prepared to once again be in his father's house, to once again be in the covenant, if you like, but to be there as a servant and not to be there as a son, because his behavior has robbed him of his status as a son. And so it's with that in mind then that he sets off in verse 20. Now, this is the son then, okay? The son is thinking about his relationship with his father. And can I ask you to take a moment here? Because these parables, they are asking us to reflect on how we understand a relationship to God. How does the elder son think of his relationship to the father? And he tells us, doesn't he, these many years I have served you. The elder son has a relationship of works with his father. And so, as we'll see tonight, one way of thinking about our relationship to God is to have a works relationship. Now, if you, in your thinking, have a works relationship with God, what we'll see about the elder son is what will be true of you. The younger son, how does he think of this relationship? Well, the story of the younger son is the teaching of Jesus on the subject, can you lose your sonship? Through your behavior, through your actions, can you forfeit the right to be called a son? Now, that's what we'll continue with this morning. So can you or I, can we pursue pleasure and the present and friends with the result that we forfeit our right to be called sons? Now that's what's going on in this young man. Okay, so again, if we take a look at verse 18, I have sinned. So he recognizes the sinfulness of his behavior. There's no question about the sinfulness of his behavior. He then thinks, knowing his father as he does, he still thinks that he's lost the right to be a son. So off he goes. And you see verse 20, he arose and came to his father. Now, there's Jesus telling you, he came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion on him and fell on his neck and kissed him. So the response of the father is what? What would you say? He's been looking out for him. He's been waiting for him. He's been hoping for his return. He ran and meet him. He has compassion on him. He kisses him. He welcomes him. What's the response of the Father? And the response is, you are still my son. In spite of what you've done, regardless of how you look, no matter what mess you're in, you're still my son. So he embraces him and welcomes him as a son. But look at this. The son, verse 21, still with this idea in his head that he has forfeited his right to be a son, still thinks that he is now a servant in the family. Verse 21. Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son. So he's just been embraced as a son, welcomed as a son, received as a son, but he's still in his thoughts thinking he is to be the servant. And so you get these famous verses from 22 to 24, in which there's a series of acts done by the Father to reassure and convince the Son that he remains the Son. And so you can see you've got the robe, you have the ring, you have the sandals, and you have the fatted calf. And that's the idea then. Four actions to demonstrate, not just to the Son, but to the entire household, that this is still my son. And the closing words of this first half of the parable is evidence. Verse 24, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So the Father demonstrates his love, his goodness, his mercy, that this young man remains his son. So let's bring this together, and then we'll come to the Lord's table. We are learning about God and the idea that our relationship with God is a relationship of father and son. It's a relationship of father and child. That's the relationship we have. And the question is, can we lose that relationship by our actions, by our priorities, by our preferences? Can we behave in such a way so that we forfeit our rights to be called sons of God? And the answer is no. Our Father will always regard us as his sons and his daughters. He will rejoice over us and welcome us and love us as his sons. And that's the first part of this parable. Now, this isn't a license to journey off into the far country. And there are many more things we can say here about the Father and how he, if you like, lets the son go into the far country, and how in love he waits patiently. And we can even think of how the son has to go through this cognitive change. He starts to think as a result of his circumstance. But the central idea is you cannot lose sonship. Because God in his grace and God in his love has made us sons of God. And do you remember how John put it? What manner of love is this that we should be called sons of God? But let's pray, shall we?